97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. We have such a huge lineup of fantastic guests for this hour. Rob Schneider, the actor and comedian, is going to join us. He's going to be in town to talk about the Shroud of Turin, which is very fascinating. Joining us now is someone that is making a lot of waves nationwide and also taking on some very important cases is Missouri's Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Thank you for joining us here in St. Louis.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
So one of the big things that we've seen in recent years, or at least I would say in the last recent months, is trying to bring integrity back into women's athletics, particularly college, high school sports. And part of that is trying to reverse some of the damage that was done the last 4 years under President Joe Biden. You have joined other attorney generals across the United States demanding that NCAA reinstates the records, titles, and awards and recognitions from those female athletes who had them stripped away. Can you talk about this suit and what you hope happens?
Yeah, look, this is about restoring the integrity of women's sports, and let's restore those champion women who achieved at the highest level of athletic competition to the pantheon where they belong in the record books. Shame on Joe Biden and the radical progressive left for ever letting men compete in women's sports and steal those titles.
I find that a lot of people agree with that. They look at the unfair advantages, and generally speaking, what you're doing is you're taking female athletics, you're making it into this cultural game, which is not designed to be, particularly when you're playing these like gender politics into it. They just want it to be what it's designed to be, biological women competing with other biological women. That way it's fair. But what you find is that fairness, once it's taken away, that you lose the integrity of it, and in college sports, especially at that level, and even when you go back to high school athletics, that's something that people just don't want to see. So I feel like you're in good company.
Yeah, I mean, look, 26 other states have joined this demand, and that's what we feel like we're in good company. Who's on the other side of this issue? I mean, who is it that's arguing that biology doesn't matter, or that somehow women should have a lesser role if men come in and steal their accomplishments? I mean, I've never heard anyone argue that, and yet that's the position that the Biden administration took, and it's absolutely untenable. Biological reality does matter. At the end of the day, God gave men and women different parts for a reason. And so we have women's sports where women have achieved incredible accomplishments. We should be celebrating those, not denigrating them by allowing men to steal those records.
So do you take this on a federal level when you join other attorney generals as opposed to a state level for the sake that, you know, the NCAA may realize, okay, this is the way people feel now, but then they don't change their mind, like let's say a leftist progressive gets into the White House or whatever, and then they start this push up again in the future? Is the whole idea trying to set this as the benchmark, as the ground laying to make sure it doesn't change in the future?
Yeah, I think that's right. And there's strength in numbers. Like I said, when I've got more than half the states in the nation, more than half the states of the nation joining this effort and all speaking with one voice, there's strength in numbers. And Missouri was proud to be one of the voices in this process. And look, Missouri's led the way on this issue since I took office back in January of 2023, when the whistleblower came forward from the transgender mutilation clinic there in St. Louis saying that this stuff was harming children. It was not based on science or medicine, and that, you know, gender dysphoria is a mental health problem that should be treated with psychology and psychiatry, not powerful drugs, gender mutilation, or ignoring biological realities.
Yeah, I do think in the future we'll go back and look at this, and we'll look at some of these different surgeries that were done, these genital mutilations and things that were cheered. We'll be horrified by, culturally speaking, what we signed on to, or at least allowed, and then tried to advocate for in some cases. It was just quite terrifying. Joining us now is Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. I wanted to talk to you about your lawsuit with Planned Parenthood and what could come from this. So the idea is that when you have these certain abortion pills, mifepristone, these medications are not fully disclosing the side effects with it. Let's talk about that, because why do you think Planned Parenthood, or at least these abortion pills, are treated differently than any other medication? I don't get that.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And Planned Parenthood is not allowed to lie. And the problem is their lies are deadly. Planned Parenthood is targeting Missouri women, saying that mifepristone, a powerful chemical designed to kill a child in the womb is somehow as safe as over-the-counter medication like Tylenol. Well, we know that's not true based on clinical studies in science and medicine that has been published for the past several years. 4 to 10% of women who take this powerful drug, mifepristone, suffer life-threatening complications. We're talking about botched abortions, hemorrhaging, and enormous unknown risks if the woman was undiagnosed with an ectopic pregnancy. And that's not even to mention the anxiety and depression. Look, at the end of the day, mifepristone is not a birth control device. It is a chemical designed to take human life, and there are serious life-threatening side effects that go with it. Planned Parenthood needs to be honest about that. It is a deceptive business practice for them to encourage women in Missouri to come to their clinics and take these pills. But the worst part about it is the biggest lie that's happening is not only is Planned Parenthood targeting Missouri women with these deadly lies, but they're encouraging any women who take this powerful chemical to then conceal having taken it if they have to go to the emergency room. In other words, Planned Parenthood is saying, take this powerful, dangerous drug, kill your child, and then don't tell if you have to go to the emergency room and are sick from it. Well, that increases the danger and the health risk to the women patient, but it also hides the data to the rest of us. And so this is a very dangerous situation. We want restitution for any woman who they've tricked in the state of Missouri, and $1.8 million in damages and penalties to the state of Missouri, and an injunction to put a stop to their deadly lies.
Yeah, I don't think that number's high enough. Honestly, I think people listening are saying, okay, $1.8 million, given the size of Planned Parenthood, you'll have major Democratic donors writing that check on behalf of Planned Parenthood. So if they continue to operate the way they can, the big key here is to make sure they can operate in this way. And what I find, too, in a lot of ways, is that when these expecting mothers are giving the truth, the reality, like, for example, ultrasound photos of what they are carrying, it changes their opinion on things because then they're actually seeing things for the way they are. If you were to disclose this the proper way and discuss what your body is doing to that life inside of you, I think that will change a lot of minds. And that's why disclosure is so important.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, at the end of the day, we live in a dangerous society post-passage of Amendment 3. The drafters and purveyors of this death amendment chose ambiguous, vague language so they could trot out a parade of horribles after its passage, and that's what's happened. Look, it passed by a razor-thin majority in the state of Missouri back in November, and ever since then, Planned Parenthood has marched into court in Kansas City and convinced the judge to strip away every health and safety regulation that the state has to protect women from dangerous things like informed consent before an abortion, or hey, doctors should have to sterilize instruments before performing these dangerous operations, or there should be fire escapes and fire extinguishers at these facilities. The Planned Parenthood has convinced a judge in Kansas City that those things are now unconstitutional because of Amendment 3. I pose it to you. Would the voters have enacted Amendment 3 if they had known all of this parade of horribles would have come true? Moreover, the nadir of depravity has been represented in court in Jackson County with Planned Parenthood marching in and saying they now have a constitutional right to traffic minors across state lines for dangerous abortions without parental consent. I have no reason to think that the voting population of the state of Missouri would have accepted that and would have voted for Amendment 3 if they had known that was going to be the outcome.
Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey joining us. One last thought about ICE agents in their masks. That's become a big debate and the legality of it when it comes to being a federal agent. They look at it as a safety or disclosure issue. They look at it as scary if an ICE agent is concealing his face in some ways. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I don't care if criminal aliens who have violated our national sovereignty and our laws are scared of ICE agents. I, in fact, want them to be scared of ICE agents and go home. That's what they should do. If they're scared of ICE, they should leave now and go back to where they came from.
I think a part of this, too, and I think about some of the different protests that happened in St. Louis, and I think about those police officers that had gases sprayed on them. They had urine bombs thrown at them. They had projectiles. And you think about all these different things that they were confronted with when these mobs gang up on them. And I think, why wouldn't you, if you're an agent, want to protect yourself? You're wearing, you know, bulletproof vest. You're wearing other pieces of equipment. But why wouldn't you want to protect your face, too? And I think that should just be a part of it, that it should just be accepted as opposed to some people using it as a way to weaponize a way to try to bring repercussion to a federal agent that is doing their job in enforcing immigration law. So I find it highly reasonable that you would wear something on your face.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And look, several of these ICE agents have been targeted for homicides, for physical attacks, for first degree assaults. Serious physical injury has been inflicted upon them. They've been doxxed. Their family and homes have been identified online. I mean, the left is in such an uproar because they don't want to have a United States of America. They want to eradicate any sense of national unity by eliminating any kind of national borders. And so eliminating the enforcement agency, ICE, is the way that they do that. And they're provoking and promoting attacks against ICE agents. It's altogether appropriate that they would want to and need to shield their faces for safety reasons as they protect us from this foreign invasion.
Yeah, and let alone their families. You think about what could happen if they're at their home and someone gets the wrong idea. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, thank you so much for joining us. You're fighting the good fight. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, sir. Appreciate you. Talk soon.
Joining us after the break is president of the St. Louis First Responders Canteen, Daniel Cunningham. We're going to talk to him about what's coming up here soon, a partner in 97.1 Talk in Action, Partner of July. We're going to discuss that after the break. I'm Ryan Renker, filling in for Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk. Ryan Renker filling in for Mark Reardon. Joining us now is the president of the St. Louis First Responder Canteen. They're an organization that supports first responders across the St. Louis region. Daniel Cunningham, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
We're also a partner this month for the 97.1 Talk in Action. Fantastic work. First responders, they need our support. Tell us what you do.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of a very simple concept. We provide canteen support to first responders when they're out on an extended scenes. It's mostly the fire department on when they're doing a house fire or a fire of some sort. But that consists of water, Gatorade, snacks, things like that that they need to kind of rehydrate, replenish their bodies, and be able to continue working on and moving forward through their shifts.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things to respond to. You think, okay, you know, they show up, they do the job, they go back, everything's fine. So tell us what kind of relief this brings to those while in duty and what that means to them.
Yeah, so they are you can think about we use the term a house fire or a fire in general. The temperature inside that house is 600 degrees plus. When they're in that turnout gear and they're wearing that full body gear and all that kind of stuff that they're doing to fight that fire, and then they come out and they're dehydrated. They're looking for refreshment. They're looking for that kind of thing. So that's a relief to them. It gives them a chance to kind of replenish and be able to continue on. Around here in the St. Louis area, they work for 48 hours straight. So, you know, they might do a call and then come out and then they need to go on to the next. So they're not getting a chance to maybe go back and recover and stuff like that. So that gives us a chance to kind of help them do that and be able to get them back up to where they're at their tip-top shape to be able to fight that fire.
Well, they must really appreciate that. Plus, I think that probably makes them feel cared for, which is a nice thing. How did you think of this to begin with? Or did you have somebody who was a firefighter in the family? How did it start for you?
Yeah. So I've learned about this program. There's other major cities that have this kind of thing and stuff like that, and other smaller cities as well. So, but my dad was a volunteer firefighter as I grew up. So I always thought that I would become a volunteer firefighter. Ended up in St. Louis. Everything is career firefighting here.
Yeah, it is.
So when I heard about it, I approached the Florissant fire chief at the time and said, hey, why don't we have something like this in the area? And he's like, great idea. We're going to help you start it. And so it was kind of a one-man show for about 2 months until we figured out the details. And then from there, we've grown. So that was in 2018 when we first got started.
Well, Daniel, do you listen then? I'm a person who listens to scanners just for traffic. So is that how you find out where to go?
So we actually, early on, that's exactly kind of what we did.
Yeah, I wondered.
As we grew what we did, we now are actually part of the fire department system. So we are actually dispatched just like any other fire truck is.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah. So we, anytime it once it's declared a working fire or something like that, an emergency where they need us, then they dispatch us just like they do anybody else.
Wow, that is something. Yeah, you think about those firefighters when the alarm goes off. What's going through their mind? Okay, I got to get my equipment. I got to get out as fast as I can. There might be kids in that house.
Yep.
There might be someone in that house that needs to be saved. They're not thinking about, better go grab the Gatorade. Run to the kitchen real quick.
Right.
Like
right.
I think about what it's like to have kids when you're trying to leave the house and they all want snacks. They all want drinks. It takes you an extra 20 minutes to get out the door. We can't have that for firefighters when they're trying to save lives. So you're offering what I think is a very important service because it helps, I'm sure, their response time. One less thing they have to worry about.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, a fire truck has a small cooler on it, but, again, they're on 48 hours. Sometimes they haven't had a chance to restock that and stuff like that. So, yeah, they're not, that's one less thing they have to worry about and think about and, you know, to be able to be out there.
Now, how do you get do you take donations? What do you take out there? Do you take water? Do you take other things? Like, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit organization, so we're fully supported by donations, whether it be corporate donations or individuals as well. So, yeah, we water, Gatorade, a few various snacks and things like that. On larger incidents, we actually provide full meals for them.
Oh, gosh.
We've done, you know, Chick-fil-A for breakfast sandwiches. We've done, you know, pizzas. Oh. We've done sub sandwiches. We've done a barbecue food truck, Man Meats, out of Florissant, where they actually will pull up and just serve out of their food truck and stuff like that. We don't, you know, we do that maybe 6 to 12 times a year. We don't need that very often, but even to that extent. Wow. So, but all of that's done out of our budget, and we know that's what we do, and that's what we're there for.
That's
you have
really
surveys.
Cool.
Like, do they tell you what kind of things they like? They're like, all right, enough with the red. Like, that red flavor, it's not the... I like the blue, I like the purple, but none of the red. Like, do they give you feedback?
They do. It's funny because I can... Some of the ones that we see a little more frequently, they can be walking up towards our table that we set up, and I can look at them and go, oh, I need to get a red ready because I know he wants a red,
oh,
or he wants
gosh.
A blue, or he wants the Slim Jims, he wants the Nutter Butters, you know, whatever kind of thing.
Now, Daniel, who staffs this? You guys are 100% volunteer, yes?
That is correct. We are 100% volunteer. So our team, we have about 30 volunteers.
Okay.
And we, like I said, we cover the entire St. Louis County area. That's kind of our primary response area. So we have volunteers across the county.
Okay.
And when the call comes out, whoever's available goes. That usually is 3 to 4 people on average. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's a little bit less. But it's just kind of who's available at that given time, whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning or it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or, you know, any time in between.
And do they each have food? Or, you know, if I was a volunteer, would I just then be assigned Chick-fil-A? I mean, how do I know what to bring?
So we have response vehicles that are staffed and are staged at one in Florissant and then in Monarch, which is Chesterfield area.
Yeah.
And then Fenton and Melville.
Okay.
So we have 4 different locations where trucks are staged. They're always stocked. They're always ready to go. And so one person at minimum has to get a vehicle, and then some will meet on scene. Some will also meet at the vehicle and ride together. So that's how that's all done.
Wow. They've got to be really grateful for this service. What's the feedback that you've gotten from, I guess, the firefighters themselves?
Yeah, the firefighters and the police officers and all them that are there, for sure. It's just nothing but grateful. You know, it's always a thank you. It's always, you know, we appreciate you being here. They know that, you know, we're there just to serve them. So, you know, they love it.
That's
what
awesome.
Happens, like, if there's a house fire and the family's outside watching all their possessions burn down, do you help them too?
We do. We take a little bit of time to meet with them. We'll, you know, we'll offer them something to drink. We'll offer them, we carry shoes and socks. You know, you think about a call at 2 o'clock in the morning, somebody runs out of the house because their house is on fire. They don't have, you know, they're grabbing pretty much nothing. So we'll throw, you know, we carry some shoes and socks and stuff that we'll give them as well if we need to. The American Red Cross kind of covers the taking care of them beyond that point. But yeah, we don't ignore them, obviously, in that situation. We make sure we kind of care for them as well in that given moment. So
how can people help if they wanted to make a donation or learn more?
Yeah, our website is just our initials, if you will, stlfrc.com. That is our website on there. There's a way to donate to, you know, support us through that. There's ways if somebody's interested in volunteering, they can definitely sign up there as well for that. And then we do a couple fundraisers a year. We have a big one coming up in October. That's October 19th at Top Golf out in Chesterfield.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's going to be a fun day. It includes lunch and all that kind of stuff. And there's information on the website for that as well. But that's, you know, that's how we raise money, and that's how we do things. So we'd love any support.
I got to say, I've never heard this before. Is this something that they have in different cities, or is this unique to St. Louis?
No, he said they do have them in different cities.
Is that right?
Yeah. Not every city does, and some are volunteer, some aren't. And American Red Cross does it in some cities, so does Salvation Army and other things. But obviously here, you know, we're the organization that takes care of that.
Daniel, do you need volunteers as well, or is it mainly right now donations you need of you know, money and equipment and stuff?
Yeah, we always can take the volunteering is not something like a typical, like a food bank would be or something, where they're just, you're coming in for one time. You're committing, obviously, to doing what we're doing and being available and stuff like that. So sometimes that's not ideal for some people. So that's, you know, where the donations definitely help and support us in that way. But, you know, we're always looking for both.
Wow. St. Louis First Responder Canteen. So STL, FRC, First Responders Canteen, STLFRC.com.
Yep.
You have some photos and your mission on there. You're a nonprofit. I got to tell you, this is wonderful.
Appreciate that.
It's things you don't think about. This is something that it's a little paying attention to the details of trying to help people that are out there saving lives. Often they go forgotten. That's just the job they do. They go out and they come back and it's over. They get a shower and they go home, hopefully to their families.
Absolutely.
But if you think about what happens while they're in there, one, it's a stressful situation because you're trying to save lives. But two, you're right. They're exhausting themselves going into house fires. So it's only natural to think that they would probably need some of these things, but they don't always have it readily available. Yeah. So this gives them a little something to maybe a second wind, make sure they don't get too exhausted, too dehydrated themselves. Because the worst thing you want is you don't want them getting hurt while inside this fire either.
Right, exactly.
It's amazing.
It's so hot right now. I have to think they have to be especially appreciative. I mean, it is just disgusting hot.
Yeah. Yeah. We carry, during the summertime, we do cold towels dunked in ice water just so they could put them over their heads and do that kind of thing. And we carry misting fans and some other stuff like that specific for the summer when it's really this hot. Wow. So
that's how
they do it.
Yep.
Daniel Cunningham, president of the St. Louis First Responder Canteen. So First Responder Canteen, FRC. So the website, STLFRC.com. You can make a donation and learn more about the organization right there. Daniel, thank you so much for coming in today.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate
that. And thank you for the work you do. It's truly, truly good work, and it's worthwhile work. And I'm sure you hear this all the time, but I mean, it's just a true blessing to, I'm sure, so many different people in St. Louis.
Yep.
Joining us after the break is an actor, comedian, Rob Schneider. Looking forward to having a conversation with him on his new book called You Can Do It, Speak Your Mind, America. It's on Free Speech, 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Wow, what a big hour we have here, I gotta say. Joining us now is an actor and comedian. I think pretty much everyone knows who he is. He also has a book that came out not that long ago called You Can Do It, Speak Your Mind, America. Rob Schneider, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rhino. Thanks for having me, brother.
I am very excited. I think that we're in a weird time in American history because we take for granted free speech. I think you can look at other countries. You can look at Canada. You can look at England as examples of, okay, we're kind of similar lifestyles in a way, like with Canada, where there are neighbors. But you can see what happens when you take free speech away. And you can see how they punish their people, how the government can target people. And wow, that's a precious thing America has. It is a really important thing to speak your mind, isn't it?
Well, no, it's absolutely. There's a reason why, you know, George Washington and our founding fathers wanted it first, and of our, you know, the Bill of Rights and our first amendment is free speech. And it's no coincidence that that is one of the cornerstones of, I think, why America continues to be the creative, technological and, you know, financial capital of the world, because it allows for debate, it allows for contentious debate, and it allows for creativity. And you don't get creativity, you don't get smooth from smooth, you get it from friction. And so, you know, one thing has been under threat is debate and discourse. And it's the Democratic majority, which was more than happy to squelch debate recently, and, you know, kind of hide behind the illusion of tolerance, and, you know, which is just redressed communism that you can label woke. What it really was a way to diversity, was a way to and DEI was a way to demand conformity and demand power and control. That's really what it was. So free speech is essential, because we need to have the best ideas, and the worst ideas, even if they're horrible, they need to be aired. And so that you can say, well, those are terrible ideas. The idea of who gets to decide what language, even if it's called hate speech or what, I mean, the idea of free speech is to protect the speech, if it means anything, is to say something that somebody else could find, could be repulsed by or completely disagree with. And then, you know, it isn't to say, like, you know, when Stephen Colbert, he got his show canceled recently, free speech isn't free from consequence, but what free speech must be about in the United States of America is to not have reprisals from your government, and to be able to continue to seek redress. And that was something that when the Biden administration has been proved, what they did was and it wasn't Biden, obviously, because his brain didn't work anymore, but they were silencing Americans, and they were absolutely, you know, not wanting any dissent. So that was the Biden administration was dipping its toes into totalitarianism, authoritarianism, and tyranny. And what I think of the Trump administration is not a revolution. It is a counter-revolution to the insanity that that we have been besieged with in this country. And that's why it was so important for people to step up and then to demand change, which was good. I mean, I still think that, when I went to the airport this morning, I had to show my ID. When I went to FedEx, I had to show my identification to mail, a small package. Mm-hmm. And yet they don't want you to do that in many Democratic states to vote. And I think that's for the express purpose of cheating. And that has to stop. And people have seen through that now. And it's no coincidence that the Democrats have lost the Supreme Court, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and now the White House. And if they want to become part of a normal, party, which is what we need. We need two normal political parties that function. Then they're going to have to stop this authoritarian toe dip.
Yeah, you mentioned the Colbert thing. I think the lesson for that is if you're losing $40 million a year, it's probably a bad idea to tell your employer they're stupid with a lot of explicit words attached to it. It's probably a bad idea.
I think so. Yeah. Well, here's what Colbert did. Colbert, he was already, it's like if you think of a pizza, he's already throwing half the pizza in the garbage. So he's just literally starting with half a pizza. And then that half a pizza is all Greg Gutfeld. He gets it all to himself. And then the pizza that the half a pizza left over, he's got to share with two other guys. So it's a third, third, and third for half a pizza. So he's dealing with one slice of the whole pie.
Oh,
and that's just not enough money. He's got 200 employees, and he lost losing money, and then he craps on his employees and his employer. That's just a bad strategy to continue to try to make $20 million a year.
You know, and I remember in talking about some of the late night people, one of my favorite was Conan. And I remember when Conan was paying out of pocket his staff, and I thought, okay, Colbert, there's 200 people, you're losing money, but there's a lot of people working on it that are going to be out of a job soon because you just thought it was a good idea to crap on your employer. I mean, there's a lot of consequences to that.
It is. There is. And I hope that that's a spanking that that other people will notice, look, I'm sure he's going to be able to squeak by with the $100 million that he has left.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling sorry for him.
Well, let's talk about the Shroud of Turin. There's a conference coming to St. Louis. You're going to be a part of it. What's your fascination with the Shroud of Turin?
Well, first of all, it's a reawakening of faith for me and for so many others, because what you really have is the pieces of cloth, the Egyptian cloth that it was Jonathan of was it Aramea that who had this and asked for this for the body to be wrapped in this Egyptian cloth. That's the only reason it survived. It's the only cloth that could have survived was linen, and you have this that it was tested, and it was tested in the lower left hand corner by three different carbon labs that did the carbon dating. And the further that they went into the shroud material, the further back in time it went. The earliest was, I believe, 1170, but it was from 1190. I think from 1370 to 1190. But what happened was they never put into question what Joe Marino and Susan Benford discovered, was that the French nuns repaired this over years with this invisible thread. Invisible weave, and that was what they so that's what threw the carbon dating off. And so now they were able to test that it really is a 2,000 year old cloth. So what you have in this piece of cloth, which has blood in it has the exact wounds from that Jesus Christ suffered on the cross. And you see, they've been able to test blood. They've been also to get pollen off of this that has only comes from that part of Jerusalem. So it's an incredible thing. What really it is the best description I've ever heard of it was that the Shroud of Turin is the receipt of what Jesus Christ paid for all of us. And it is the greatest gift ever in the world.
You know, can I tell you my problem with it? And I think about it because I'm a Christian, and I think, okay, if I were to try to tie my faith into an object, I would think, okay, it would be awesome if it was real, and it would be fantastic to have an artifact like that exist. But I also worry, what if one day it does come back into question? I don't want my faith to be in question because I tied so much into this object.
Well, first of all, we have to go by the definition of faith. You know, a cloth or a piece of paper or whatever it has, whether it's even if it's a piece of the cross, these are just artifacts. They're not – they don't express the or begin to – tell the story of faith, which is faith is a willingness to not know but to proceed anyway. But it shouldn't impact us, and we shouldn't worship a piece of cloth or any item. But what it does is there's an image on there, which I believe, if you look at the human being when the fertilization begins, there's a flash of light, and whether they can relate that to some sort of zinc oxide explosion, the chemical thing. It's, I believe that when Jesus Christ came back to life, that's what sent that reverse negative onto this piece of cloth. Now,
that's amazing.
And it can only be done in that when it was wrapped in something and it was a negative. If it was something that medieval forgery, why would this guy do something that was an inversion of a negative when photography wouldn't be invented for another 500 years? So I think it's an important thing that we don't get lost in artifacts and worship this and have our faith in anything other than the living, breathing Savior, Jesus Christ. And that is really, really an important thing, Ryan, to bring up, because it isn't a cloth that was provides salvation. I mean, the most beautiful thing my priest, Father Pasco, told me, he said, even the cold air that the baby Jesus suffered on the night of his birth is enough suffering for our own salvation. And it's just a beautiful gift and the payment that was made. But what I think it can do is I think it can provide something as we've all experienced in this dark age that we are encountering now and a rise of evil, which I think we can plainly see it, whether since the pandemic and the flirtation with the global tyranny that we were dealing with. I think there is a rise in evil in the world. And I think at that same time, it's no coincidence that I think there's also a rise in faith. And I think there's a number of young people coming to the faith now. It's very encouraging. And I don't think that's by accident. I think this is an intended time. And I think we will be, there will be tough times ahead. And I think if you, you know, I mean, I would say that what my father, Chad Ripperger, said, which I take great solace in, Jesus already won. This is just a mop-up mission.
Yeah. But you're going to be...
We're going to have some tribulations. There'll be some times to come, which will be very difficult for a lot of people.
So you'll be part of the conference here in St. Louis, Shroud, 2025conference.com.
Yes.
It's July 31st through August 2nd. I don't know how much time you have, if you have another interview to do. I had one other question that I was hoping to ask you, but if you have to go, I understand too.
What's that?
It was an old Norm MacDonald story that I've heard, and I was hoping you can tell me if it's true or not.
All right, tell me.
All right. I heard Norm MacDonald tell the story back in SNL that George Harrison visited once, was playing some guitar, and Al Franken came out and said, "Cut that music out. We're trying to work here." And Norm MacDonald said, "Are you kidding me? We had like a private concert from George Harrison, and Al Franken, being a joker, cut it out." Is there any truth to that story?
That is a true story, but Norm wasn't there.
Oh, he wasn't. He just told the story, but he wasn't there.
This was back... He told the story. He wasn't there, but there was a story that Al Franken did do that. He just as a joke to him, but you know, George Harrison didn't think of it as a joke.
Oh,
George Harrison was just horrified by that and like uncomfortable. And that kind of sums up Al Franken's what he thinks is funny, as opposed to other people are horrified by it. You know, and Al is funny, but he also is capable of frightening people like he did in that moment to a very tender soul. Was no longer with us, but that's a true story. But no, Norm wasn't there. That happened in the late 70s, early 80s.
Right. Well, I've heard the story. I got to tell you, I've heard the story. I've never seen it published anywhere, so I've always was curious if it was true or not. So I'm so glad
I can learn that story. And that's from Jim Downey. He's the head writer of SNL and the real genius of SNL, the creative comedy writer Jim Downey. He's unbelievable. And that's a true story. That's one of my stories that I have in the back of my head too. It's like, wow, incredible place. But that's the thing about Saturday Night Live. We had some of the most amazing people would be able to come through there, and it would be a real, one day, I'm running around, into the next sketch, changing my clothes, and then all of a sudden you see Neil Young, he's playing Harvest Moon. Yeah. Neil Young and I are going to say, I'm going to stop and I'm going to hear this, and I don't care if I'm late for the next sketch. This is the moment I want to just take in right now. So that's
before cell phones.
Thing.
Yeah, that's the things you can enjoy, before you thought, I better record this real quick. No, you get to live in the moment. So enjoy St. Louis. We'll be so happy to have you here. Rob Schneider, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate
it. Thank you. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you then. Take care now.
And anyone listening, if you want to learn more about that conference and maybe some of the different speakers, including Rob Schneider, Shroud2025conference.com. There's panels that you're going to learn a lot. It's a very fascinating idea, and it's so cool that it's here in St. Louis, happening July 31st to August 2nd. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk. What an hour. Andrew Bailey, Missouri's Attorney General. We had Daniel Cunningham, and then, of course, comedian Rob Schneider. Sue, isn't Rob something else? He is so good.
I was impressed.
He's great. What do you know Rob Schneider from? The first thing that comes to mind.
Well, it's just the title of his book and how I would say it in my head, how he would say it on the show.
You
can do it.
I think my first one. I literally just watched Grown Ups the other day, so that's the one that's the one that's fresh in mind. But
I love Grown Ups.
So many great movies. Well, when I saw that this morning on the sheet, I was like, I called Fred. I was like, you mean the Rob Schneider? He was like, yeah. I was like, man, that's why he's the Hall of Famer.
Hey, Ryan,
I find fascinating about Rob Schneider is that, and he didn't bring this up in his interview with you, but the panel that he's going to be on when he's in town next week for the Shroud Conference is called Skeptics and Agnostics.
Oh, interesting.
Whose faith was impacted by the Shroud. And he didn't bring this up, but he's working on a film right now about the Shroud of Turin.
Oh.
And it's based upon a book written by one of the Shroud experts, Joe Marino. And Rob hopes to play Joe in that movie once he's done writing it.
Oh, so it's not a documentary. It's a movie.
It sounds like it's a movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I messaged my wife. I said, just interviewed Rob Schneider. She said, from Surf Ninjas? That's how she knows Rob Schneider.
Surf Ninjas, what's that?
You know what? I guess technically he was in Home Alone 2. I wonder if he met Donald Trump filming Home Alone 2. I should ask that. There's so many different things you can ask Rob Schneider, but freedom of speech and the turn that he has taken the last couple of years have been fantastic. As a comedian, I think he's been on the forefront of advocating for freedom of speech, which is just so important. And I think comedy should be right there on the front, and he was right to say it's going in the wrong direction. So I really admire that. You know what? Before we go, we got to do the audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I was thinking about maybe playing the opposite of Rob Schneider for the audio cut of the day. Jeff Daniels was talking about this last election and how it didn't go the way he thought it would. Can we play clip number 23?
I still think about Kamala and how I think she would have been a good choice. I don't care what they say, because she would have done what Lincoln did. Liz Cheney would have been Secretary of State.
Team arrivals.
Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote the book about it. That's what Lincoln did. Surrounded himself with the people who would disagree with him. It's the madness of King George. And just the deterioration of the Republican Party.
Let me say this. Did Liz Cheney really disagree with much when it came to Kamala Harris? I mean, in some of her politics, I don't know. But is it weird to still be thinking about Kamala Harris? I think it is kind of a little bit weird. I don't know. Well, maybe not. But the thing is, it's not like she's in the news. It's not like she's generating any type of things for us to talk about or reasons for us to think about her. She rarely makes appearances. She's just kind of sitting back on the major loss. Well, Sue, Fred, Ethan, I got to say, it's always so easy to do these shows, and I always have such a fun time doing it. Thank you guys for everything, for making it so easy for me here in Detroit.
Oh, we love having you.
And good luck with the heat wave. Ugh. I know once it starts kicking in, hopefully your air conditioning can keep up with it. I really do.
Oh, it's already kicked in. He just extended it.
Well, I'm saying it could keep up with it. That's the hard part. Once it gets to these triple-digit stuff. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Have a great night on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.